Ladies and gentlemen, a good morning to you. This is John Cameron Swayze in the NBC newsroom in New York. Dixie Democrats have a filibuster committee ready. American military government officials from Germany sound a warning. Russia has apparently copied the B-29 Super Fortress. The Finnish parliament is split on whether to negotiate with Russia. Today, we'll hear from our own capital, from Brussels, London, and from Berlin. We'll get into the news in just a moment, but first, your announcer.
More young women than ever before are turning to the field of nursing, finding fascinating careers in a really worthwhile profession. But in spite of the increased enrollment in schools of nursing, more nurses are still needed. The public has been educated to make use of hospitals. One out of every nine persons in the United States was admitted to a hospital sometime last year. And more patients mean more demand for the services of highly trained, skillful graduate nurses. So the profession of nursing is a secure profession. And not only that, it affords you a fine education at far less than the cost of 4 years in college. During your 3 years training, you'll study many vital subjects, all equipping you to pick your own career in whatever branch of nursing appeals to you most. So for a career with real opportunity, see your nearest hospital today. Now to the NBC newsroom.
A warning has been given by two members of the American military government in Germany who have just returned to this country. At the Air Force base at Westover, Massachusetts, the two, James Newman of Akron, Ohio, and Louis Glaser of Washington, said the communists are hard at the job of infiltrating the labor unions of Germany. Their aim is, of course, to bring about strikes and any form of labor trouble that will make it harder for the Marshall Plan to be a success. They say that Russia wants Europe to collapse in despair and that the United States had better be realistic in its attitude. Both men are en route to the nation's capital to confer with the Army Department. In Seattle, Washington, Boeing Aircraft says Russia has apparently produced a big plane, a 72-passenger job, copied from the B-29 Super Fortresses, which were interned in Russia when they made forced landings there at the time of the Pacific War and before Russia declared war on Japan. This is not the first, but it is the most emphatic statement that the Russians copied the planes. According to the account in Boeing's company magazine, there are at least 20 parts that are exact duplicates of the parts for B-29s. Another whose remarks bore on the international news picture was former Czechoslovakian Ambassador Slavik, who resigned when the communists swept in. He said in New York that Democratic leaders in his homeland were taken by surprise by the communist swift coup. Said Dr. Slavik, they simply didn't believe it could happen in Czechoslovakia. There, this morning, a purge of the army is underway. In Finland, the matter of negotiation with Russia is up to President Paasikivi. The parliamentary groups of the nation are split on the question. The Agrarian Party, a strong one, is on record with the statement that it cannot recommend negotiations as proposed by Stalin. A quick rundown of the situation shows that four of the six parliamentary groups, representing 101 of the 200 votes, a bare majority, do favor negotiations, but do not favor any far-reaching military alliance. A fifth group, the Agrarians, oppose negotiations. The sixth and final group favors all-out military alliance, which is quite natural because it is the communist-dominated Popular Democrats. The next move is up to Paasikivi. At Lake Success today, the matter of solution of the Palestine partition problem seems to be up to the United States and Russia now that the Security Council has passed the buck by calling on the five major powers to find a way out. That would mean Britain, France, and China, as well as the United States and Russia. But Britain has already announced she won't take part. China has abstained most of the time right along, and France has shown great reluctance to take a stand. In Jerusalem, the British High Commissioner, who is Sir Alan Gordon Cunningham, has appealed for the safety of the UN personnel in the Holy Land. But the Arab Higher Committee says the six members of the UN staff, who arrived a few days ago, may soon need more protection. Jews in Haifa have today killed five persons and damaged three buildings in renewed violence. Now let's hear some direct reports on the morning news. First, Arthur Barrio in Washington.
The eyes of Dixie are on the Senate, and the men of the South are breathing the word filibuster, which brings up thoughts of people reading telephone directories, Who's Who, Frank Merriwell, or anything else they can get their hands on. The Southerners are afraid the Northern Democrats or the Republicans might try to pull a fast one and sneak one of the president's civil rights proposals across the plate. So 18 of the Democrats from below the Mason-Dixon have agreed to keep one of their number in the Senate at all times. If one of these anti-discrimination measures comes up, That's the cue for the Southerners to start talking and to block action by exercising their tonsils. Says Senator Johnston of South Carolina, "We're solid Southerners in the Senate, all right. We'll work as a unit against the civil rights proposals." And on the other side of the Capitol, House Minority Leader Sam Rayburn tells the world that he's against any bill that has a tendency toward crippling segregation laws. The House Appropriations Committee has already killed one of these. The committee killed a provision which would have denied federal funds for hospitals and vocational education to any state which doesn't provide equal job and schooling opportunities for Negroes. It's possible that the GOP pulled this one to keep the Southerners riled up, not against them, but against the president. Vacation for President Truman has definitely ended. Otherwise, this morning, it looks as though the Senate might not reach a vote next week on the Marshall Plan after all. Those who oppose the measure, as it stands now, are talking about a fight to cut $1.3 billion off the first year's outlay, so we can look for plenty of squabbles, like this one. Senator Hawks of New Jersey says the plan won't stop communism and may lead to another war. Hawks lost a son in the last war, and he says he wants his grandson to know he didn't vote to sell the United States down the river. Whereupon Senator Lodge of Massachusetts replied that he and other supporters of the bill deeply resent Hawks' aspersions on their patriotism and sanity. That's the note on which the Senate's wound up its first week of debate. This is Arthur Barrio in Washington.
Next, we span the Atlantic to hear latest developments at the Belgium conference from NBC's European news director, Henry Cassidy, in Brussels.
The Western European alliance is practically an accomplished fact this morning. Two papers have been placed on the conference table, one by the Benelux countries, Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg, the other a new one by Britain and France. The differences creating no great difficulties are being reconciled, and the treaty is now taking form. It was only this morning that the five-power conference really got down to work in the green room of the Belgian Foreign Ministry. The first meeting on Thursday was confined to formalities. The Benelux countries presented their joint plan for a 50-year alliance, but the British and French were not ready with their proposal. No meeting was held yesterday because of that old-fashioned hazard of traveling through fog from England to the continent. Gladwin Jebb of the British Foreign Office was held out in the North Sea most of the day by the fog, but he finally reached Brussels last night. With him came Jean Chauvel, Secretary General of the French Foreign Ministry, France's leading career diplomat and a new addition to the conference. Between them, Jebb and Chauvel worked out in London and brought to Brussels the British-French plan. At 10 o'clock this morning, that is 4 hours ago, all the delegates met for the first time with all the documents before them. They conferred for 2 hours, adjourned for lunch, and they meet again this afternoon. The main problem seems to be whether the treaty should contain a military clause for automatic action in case of aggression. No generals are present, so any military clause will be left until later, but it is generally agreed that the main purpose of the treaty is mutual defense. A communique will be issued tonight, and the conference is expected to end on Monday. This is Henry Cassidy in Brussels.
News of another conference, this one in the British capital, from Leon Pearson in London.
The three-power conference on Germany came to an end this morning in London. This was the first time the problems of post-war Germany have been discussed without Russia. The conference was very quiet. No fireworks, no recrimination, no headlines. There will be headlines, however, tomorrow, after the official communique is issued at 12 noon Washington time. In the meantime, I have learned the essential facts of what this statement will say. First, the work has not been completed, but will lead to more talks sometime next month. The communique doesn't say so, but I understand these talks will be held in Berlin. Second, the principal subjects for this next session will be the Ruhr, the political statute for the future German state, and harmonization of economic policies in Western Germany. Third, representatives of Germany will be invited to attend the 16 Nations Conference on the Marshall Plan opening March 15 in Paris. I understand this is the result of American insistence. Fourth, fifth, and sixth points, the communique will embody recommendations about the future of the Ruhr, the dismantling of the German industrial plant, and the future level of German industry. But only recommendations, not decisions. The conference has been very modest and rather faltering. It faltered especially on the problem of the Ruhr. The French plan for international control of the Ruhr struck British objections that this would antagonize the Germans and feed the fires of Soviet propaganda. It now seems clear that if any agreement on the Ruhr is reached, it will be the French who yield. The Ruhr is in the British zone, and they intend to maintain their control. This is Leon Pearson in London.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to make a last-minute switch. Instead of going to Germany, we have just found we could reach Finland direct. So come in, Paul Sherbloom in Helsinki.
These are the latest developments in Finland. Here is a last-minute tip from a Foreign Office source. President Paasikivi is at this very moment sitting with the Foreign Relations Committee of the government. The meeting was called to order to decide on Finland's action in response to Stalin's proposal of a military alliance. This much seems sure. Finland will negotiate with Russia. And it is believed that instead of the Russians coming here to Helsinki, the Finns will send a delegation to Moscow. The membership of the delegation has yet to be announced. All members of the government have been notified to stay in the capital over the weekend. A clear parliamentary majority is dead set against signing any military treaty with the Russians. The attitude of all Finns, except the communists, is that Finland should stick to her neutrality. Finns have had enough of war. The communists, however, assert that neutrality is not possible in present-day Europe, and they claim a military alliance with Russia is Finland's surest guarantee of security. Lord Pakenham said in the House of Lords in London a few days ago that, like the other Eastern European countries, the government of Finland has been invited to visit Bluebeard's mansion to view the remains of their predecessors and to receive the kiss of death. This was not counting on the sisu Finns are famous for. Between 80 and 90% of the Finns can be counted on to resist the kiss with all their might. They are negotiating to avoid a diplomatic offense. This is Paul Sherblom in Helsinki.
In the United States and over the nation, on the West Coast, not only is Harry Bridges minus his job as a regional director of the CIO, from which he was ousted yesterday, but there are reports that efforts to deport him will be renewed. These are so far unofficial. Arthur Barrio, in reporting from Washington, brought us up to date concerning the Dixie Rebels. Here's a little sidelight. South Carolina's Governor Thurmond has received a letter from Mrs. W.H. Stemple of Valdez, North Carolina, who told him that if the civil rights program meant it was necessary to secede, she's for it, but it will take money. So she enclosed $100 in Confederate money. Georgia's Governor Thompson, meanwhile, has taken a strong stand against the Ku Klux Klan, has called for laws to end its meetings of intimidation. In Pittsburgh, two robbers who were caught, handcuffed, and who then escaped from police, wounding two officers in the getaway, have been recaptured. They were still handcuffed together. One was wounded. A small army of police officers took part. More news in just a moment. Meanwhile, your announcer.
America has a big job to do in this post-war world job. A job that can't be done unless every American pitches in and does his part. And you're not doing your part if you're letting the poisons of racial and religious prejudice interfere with the way you get along with your neighbors and the people you work with. Division here at home weakens the United States on the international scene by promoting the belief that democracy has failed at a time when we particularly need to show that it's working better than ever. And discrimination against fellow workers or discrimination in employment practices annually robs the United States of millions of hours of productive labor and the best skill and talents of countless workers. We have enough real trouble on our hands without making them more complicated by the insecurities that racial and religious prejudice bring. So guard yourself and your family from any violation of our American standard of fair play and work in your community, your church, your business, your union, your school, to promote the principles of freedom and justice that have made our country great. Again, the NBC Newsroom.
Boston, the Coast Guard says the New Bedford fishing schooner Cape Ann appears to be breaking up off Cape Cod. A very heavy surf is running. All hands are aboard the vessel. The Coast Guard ship General Green has a lifeboat in the water and is standing by. Shanghai, former Flying Tigers Commander General Chenault leaves China by plane this morning. He'll testify on American aid before a congressional committee. Pearl Harbor, Admiral DeWitt Ramsey, just back from an inspection of naval forces in the Orient, says they are sufficient for the moment. That's the way he put it. Edinburgh, Texas. Seems that the state of Texas is now sending some citrus fruit into California for sale there. That really ought to start something. Wait until the California Chamber of Commerce hears about that. That's the story, folks. John Cameron Swayze saying goodbye from the NBC Newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.